Sorry, we're doing a construction project.
It's going to fall and kill someone in the middle.
So given that this is an audio podcast, I have to explain that the webcam, which is being used for our 36 live viewers, has now been mounted on a gigantic boom.
There's like a teeny quarter ounce webcam being held by like an $800, 200 pound mechanical arm.
Get a picture of this, Alex, and we'll put it in the show notes.
Did you just open a can on the air?
No, that was ghost produced.
No, nobody here knows anything about radio. Anybody else have any noses to blow or can't open or coughing? Anybody?
Okay.
Want to mute your phones and put them in your pocket? This is the Stack Exchange Podcast, episode 64, recorded Tuesday, April 14th, 2015, at Stack Exchange headquarters in New York City, New York, where 8 million people enjoy the benefits of democracy and live under the tyranny of potholes. That's lots of potholes. Today's podcast is brought to you by string cheese. String cheese can be eaten by pulling strips from the cheese along its length and eating those strings. On today's podcast, special guest Roberta Arcoverde from the Stack Overflow development team, VP of Community Jay Hanlon.
Hello.
And VP of Engineering David Fullerton.
Howdy.
Ex-producer Alex, ghost producer Abby. I'm your host, Joel Spolsky. Welcome back, you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's great to be back, Joel.
It's been, you know, 6 months as usual.
Something like that.
We have a guest today.
We do have a guest today. Welcome, Roberta.
Hey, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Roberta is doing a terrible job vacationing. She is here in New York on vacation and spending a recording with us.
Yeah. That's
right. This was just work.
Well,
she's been coming
it's
in.
Turned into that quite quickly for her.
No, that's what I do. I'm on vacation. I just go back to work.
Wow. I don't do that. Maybe I do.
Joel barely works when he's here for
that's
work.
That's right. My work is a vacation. This is like a vacation.
Pretty
for
much,
me.
Yeah.
So, David, what does Roberta do? She works for you, doesn't she?
I think so. Yeah, that's what they told me. No,
okay, now I'm nervous.
So, yeah, Roberta, when did you join? It's been how long
Yeah,
now?
It's been over 1 year now. I joined in March 2014. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's about a year.
That's been just over a year.
Yeah, that's right.
Working on careers.
Working on careers.
That whole time.
That whole time.
And our first developer in Brazil.
Yeah, first and the only.
The only, yeah. We had another.
For now.
We had Gabe, the community manager for Portuguese Stack Overflow, was in Brazil, but then he moved to
Ithaca.
Ithaca, New
which
York.
Which is rather nicer.
Surprising.
Not.
I'm missing on the jokes. What's the problem with Ithaca?
It's very cold.
It's gorgeous.
Hang on. Before
Please
we give away too much,
it has no
I have a theory.
Beaches.
I have a theory. You've never been to Ithaca.
I have never been to Ithaca.
Wait. It has lots of natural beauty. It has gorges where the local college students commit suicide.
And 11 months of snow.
Ithaca is the town.
11 months of snow.
People in London right now are like, you can't move to Ithaca. It's always raining there. Yeah. Ithaca has terrible weather. That is what I would say. Terrible. There's always a form of water falling from the sky all the time.
They have their own money in Ithaca, Ithaca bucks, which I like to make fun of.
What?
Jared and I were.
Joel, that was terrible. Joel, did you really not go with Ithacoins?
It's a real thing. Ithaca bucks.
Come on.
Go look it up on Google. It's one of the largest alternative currencies
like
in the world.
This is like when you told me there's this quote-unquote Bitcoin that people use to purchase things, and you got me to believe it for some time.
No, Ithaca bucks are like a local currency. They're supposed to be worth 1 hour of labor or $10 approximately, and you can spend them at the local merchants. If you're like a plumber or something, you can pay with Ithaca bucks, except Ithaca bucks.
Gabe, if you were in the chat room, you could hopefully tell us if Joel is making this up or not. As far as Ithaca is best known for Cornell University and rain. Is that not fair?
And Ithaca bucks.
That's all I know of. Yeah.
Oh.
And now Gabe.
No, the Moosewood
the cookbook
that everybody has. There are probably more people bought that cookbook than live in Ithaca.
What the heck are you talking
about?
There's a restaurant in Ithaca called the Moosewood. It's like a cooperative, and there's this Moosewood cookbook, which everybody in the world has.
I am bored of this conversation.
And it's easy to confirm. We have user Mooseman in the chat room. Mooseman, is that true?
All right.
Maybe we should go back to talking about Roberta, because Ithaca is super boring.
Roberta is...
She's not even from Ithaca. We could have been talking about Rio de Janeiro this whole time.
I know. Well, that was the point.
Never been to Ithaca.
Gabe left beautiful Brazil to move to Ithaca. That's how he got there. But anyway, we only got to Gabe because we were talking about Roberta, who is from Brazil. But what we were actually supposed to be talking about was Roberta is a developer on the careers team. So can you just tell us a little bit about, you know, just some of the stuff that you've worked on in the just over a year that you've been on the team?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my first big project on careers was something we called the CQL, which is the candidate query language. And I was super excited to write that because as a researcher, a computer science researcher, I've always worked with programming languages and compilers. So it was basically a mini compiler or a mini...
Wait, this is the first time hearing about this. Oh,
yeah, that's very exciting.
So back up a step. Let's just talk about, so this is for candidate search. So this is when an employer buys candidate search on careers, they can search the candidate database. And for years, that was very basically just rudimentary full text search. And we heard from a lot of employers that they really want to do much more advanced searches on, you know, on all the different fields that we had. Yep. You know,
that's right.
It was always like C# programmer, but not in Brazil.
Yeah, they want to do like complicated queries like that. So,
So it's a very small domain specific language, a query language. So it supports Boolean operators and logic expressions, and it has some custom operators as well. So you can query things like employer, stack exchange, and not MongoDB or something like that.
Do we actually expose this to the employers? Like they type this or they have a user interface?
They don't have a user interface because as of now, I don't even think it's enabled in production right now.
No.
But what we do is there is a syntax highlighter that shows you when you type some reserved words like and or not and our custom operators as well. And we also offer some things like completion when you, as you type.
Autocomplete.
It autocompletes.
It's pretty fancy.
It is. It was awesome. It was a great project and I love it, working on it. I actually wonder if I could ever get back to it because I miss it so much.
So wait. The way this actually works, at least as far as I understand it, is we do provide sort of this advanced search dropdown.
That's right.
And that's basically just being converted into the language on the back end.
That's right. And then the expression is converted to an Elasticsearch query.
Right. So they can't actually type in this query language. It's just sort of an intermediate way that we store these queries and then pass them to Elasticsearch to run them.
Right. Oh, wait. We use Elasticsearch for candidates?
We do.
We use Elasticsearch for all searches now.
Oh, boy.
As of very recently, we finally moved everything to Elasticsearch.
Including, is there no SQL searches?
What do you mean?
Not on careers
anymore.
There's
SQL queries. We don't use full-text search for anything except...
Yeah, that doesn't really work.
No, it was good enough for a while, but Elastic is just so much more powerful.
Right.
We were using Lucene.net for a while, which is the .NET port of the Lucene engine, which is...
Sort of a dead path.
It was fine, but it became a dead project. The .NET port was dead. Lucene itself is still going on, but that's in Java, and we use Java.
Isn't Elastic sort of a continuation of Lucene in some way?
Yeah. So Elastic is just... I think it's built on top of Lucene, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So, but it provides a lot of stuff on top of that. Basically, at this point... You don't really want to use raw Lucene for anything. You want to use just about all the search projects are building on top of that. So Solr was the big one for a while, and then Elastic came along and kind of it's kind of the one that kind of the one that everyone uses now. There's still people out there who use Solr, I'm sure, and they'll write in angry notes explaining why Solr is still better than Elastic. But but we're pretty happy with Elastic. So that's one thing that Roberto's worked on.
Okay.
More recently, tell us some other things you've been working on.
Oh yeah, recently I am working on rewriting our message processor. So basically, in careers, we have a lot of things that we have to run in background or that take a lot of time or that have to be run asynchronously so that we don't fail or leave our users waiting while something is processed. And some of the things are like sending emails or updating your GitHub profile or stuff like that. And we all did that through message queues and a message processor. And that was written... We called that project Back Office, and it was written over Service Stack. And we are working on rewriting it from scratch and removing Service Stack from it. Service Stack's a great product, but it solves a lot of problems that we don't have, and we don't use even 10% of what it does. So we're just working on a simpler version of a message processor that will fit our needs and allow us to evolve it and maintain it much better and simpler than we do right now.
What is this Service Stack of which you speak? I never heard of it.
So
What even is Service Stack? I feel like this was a pet project of Demis, who used to work here.
Yeah. And then he left to make it a full-time business.
Yeah, the pet friend's like a dragon now. It's like a fool.
It's a dragon. Yeah.
That's actually how we found Demis, because the demo Service Stack, he wrote like a clone of Stack Overflow.
He did. I forgot about that. On top of Service Stack,
It was like, look how super fast it was. It was really fast, except that there was something it wasn't doing. Like
all the hard parts.
Like actually storing
like everybody's Stack Overflow.
Yeah, if I understand it correctly, it's like a competitor to WCF, which is a Microsoft framework for communicating applications. Or it's one of those communication foundations, something. So it provides a lot of features and things that we really don't use. And also, in addition to those features, there is a message queue and the message processor, which is the tiny, small, tiny part that we
do. So we were just using that one thing, and then everything else was getting all
that's right
our way.
Yeah, and like the actual breaking point for us was it has its own Redis library, its own wrapper over Redis, and mm-hmm. we have since then moved to using our own Stack Exchange Redis wrapper for everything. Because we had to write a bunch of stuff on top of Redis to handle failover between data centers and things like that that weren't actually now. I think they're in, those are coming out. Redis cluster is coming out, but we had to write our own because that didn't exist yet. And so we ended up in the state where like this one piece, the back office system, was the only thing we couldn't easily fail over to between our data centers. So, and there's no good way to just rip out the
Redis library. Why do you even need a library for Redis? Why can't you just use Redis?
Raw sockets.
Oh, is that what it wants? You just talk to it over a socket. Is there not basically. Like just a binding for C# where you can just call some basic classes that they give you?
Yeah, but you want to put a library on top of that, right, to wrap up all the commands. I mean, yeah, I guess you could write the dead simplest C# library you could write
what
just
is this?
Takes
it's just
strings.
Redis. Isn't there just like, here's my dictionary entry and here's its value?
There's key value lookup is the main thing, but there's all sorts of, Roberta can probably talk more about this.
Yeah, well, Mark Rafael's library, Stack Exchange Redis, actually does a lot of things that we need or that make our lives simpler. And one of the things is automatic failover.
So that's in the library, the client library? The Redis failover happens in the client library?
Yeah, it works with a PubSub mechanism that realizes when the, for example, the instance changed from slave to master. And so it triggers messages and broadcasts a message for every connected client so that they can also reconnect the right master. And this is actually one of the most problematic things that we had, and that's one of the things that motivated us to rewrite back office.
That seems kind of weird. Doesn't it seem like in a normal world, let's say that you wanted to have a thing like Redis, the failover wouldn't be happening in the client libraries. It would be happening in some like a router somewhere, right? Like you would have some kind of load balancer that would be like, oh, I'm not going to talk to that Redis. I'm going to talk to this Redis. The idea that every client...
Yeah. Well, I'm not the best person to talk about this. So Redis is coming out with clustering features that are built into Redis. As far as I understand it, they're not quite stable yet. Or at least when we started doing all this work for our own failovers, they certainly weren't. They were in some pre-alpha channel or something. Mm-hmm. So we needed to build it ourselves. So that's why we kind of built it in a library over on top. And we did the same thing with, well, not quite. So our SQL library handles clustering, but it also handles detecting when SQL has gone into read-only mode and handling that appropriately.
Oh, cool. That happens in the library.
Yeah, it's just convenient to do some of these things in the library. If we really want to talk about this, we should get Mark Gravel on here, and he can tell us all about it.
Okay.
I'm reading the docs for Stack Exchange Redis. Some of the other stuff that the library handles, one really important thing that you want to do in the library is reusing shared connections. So like all the SQL libraries do this too. But
right.
With Redis, you want to, you know, you don't want to open a connection every time you need to issue a query.
You don't want to log on to because that's very
slow.
You
want to have a connection pool that's managed in the library and kind of passed around.
Yeah. Even I know that in 1995, we had that.
Yes. Well, it turns out somebody has to write it the first time for .NET. And well, there are probably other projects out there, but we were probably the highest performance user of Redis in .NET at least a couple of years ago. So we tend to have unusual needs. So anyway, so that's all stuff that Robert has been working in on the careers end. And it's pretty cool stuff, you know. It's
very back-endy.
It's very back-endy, very technical stuff. And, you know, query language is kind of, you know, it's interesting that that's along the lines of what you did in your kind of some of your academic stuff before this.
That's right.
That's one of the things I always used to complain about is that a lot of developers don't realize that they can write a language that is a little compiler.
Are you going to bring up Wasabi? Let's not talk about Wasabi.
Every time someone brings up Wasabi, horrible things happen.
I would like to point out that thanks to Roslyn, these are going to just be a bunch of words that nobody's going to understand. Wasabi is the custom programming language that FogBugs was written in a long time ago. And thanks to Microsoft's open source Roslyn project, it has now finally been possible for them to write a Wasabi to C# compiler that actually generates not weirdo bizarro code, but code that is fairly clean and closely corresponds to your original Wasabi code. So they can do a one-time final translation to C# and then throw away the Wasabi source.
We're doing something a little Wasabi-like.
A little bit scary.
We didn't write our own compiler, but we're using the Roslyn compiler now to do our internationalization stuff, appropriately named Moonspeak.
Oh, so that finds like the strings and translates them for you?
Yeah, basically. It finds the strings that need to be translated to suck them out, but then also during compilation, it basically like replaces the string with like a switch statement. It'll be really fast, so you don't have to put like an inline switch statement type of.
Oh, so you don't have a subroutine to go find the correct.
Yeah, so we're not like loading it from a database, you know, or like.
Okay.
Things like that. So that's.
Is that the way it works now?
SAML project.
That's actually how it works, or that's the future?
Yeah, that's how it works.
Amazing. Well, for those that don't know, Roslyn, go check it out, because what it is all of the .NET languages, especially C#, but also VB.NET, I think. The actual front end compile, like every part of the compiler for them, is now kind of available as open source source code that you can download from Microsoft and do fun stuff with. And so if you ever want to work on C# source code, if you ever want to process C# source code in some interesting way, Roslyn has a bunch of libraries that let you do that without having to write your own personal C# parsers and lexers and that kind of stuff.
And if you want to learn more about Service Stack, you can go to servicestack.net. Servicestack.net, it is one framework for all your services and web apps that's intuitive and easy to use. Never read another textbook to learn another heavy .NET framework again. And it is developed and run by our own old friend, Demis.
Also very fast.
Oh, it is. That's next up. Super. It's obscenely fast. It's built with fast, clean, code-first, and lightweight parts.
Is it really obscene to be fast?
No, but it's obscenely fast. It's so fast. It's not necessarily obscene to be fast. This is so fast, it becomes obscene.
Yeah.
If you're curious, the construction is holistic. And check it out. Servicestack.net.
And it's thoughtfully architected.
Yes.
It is all these things.
Okay. And we have ripped it out. But you guys shouldn't.
So another thing I wanted to talk to Roberta about, since we have her here in New York, is working remotely. So you've been working from day one from Brazil.
Yeah, that's right.
A long, long way away, not in the office. We have lots of people like that, but only a few that far away.
Oh.
So just tell us a little bit about what your experience has been. This is your first time working in a remote company.
It is. It's been awesome. I mean, I think I'm lucky that in terms of time zones, we are pretty close. It's only 1 hour away now.
Yeah.
And also,
that was one of the big things we learned about working remotely, is people have to work at the same time.
Yeah.
You can be remote, but you can't be like working different hours.
You can't be in Australia.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, at first I thought it was going to be harder just because I was going to miss the interaction with my coworkers. But that, I mean, because Tech Exchange emphasizes so much that remote culture is something important, and it's built over that remote culture. So everything just works. We have Bev bashes now. We have remote beer bashes.
Yeah. Oh, that's a cool new thing.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's every Friday, and someone is responsible for setting up a time and a hangout room, and all remote workers just grab a beer and or a coffee.
Or their beverage of
or
choice.
Sorry. And they just meet and talk about shenanigans. It's
shenanigans.
Awesome.
It's recently, we've been doing it by just like passing around responsibilities, which means basically somebody just names you as the party responsible. And then the next week, it's your job to name the person who's going to be responsible for the next one. And recently, people have been like choosing topics and stuff. So last week, I think, was dad jokes.
Dad jokes. Yeah, I missed that one. But
it was pretty painful.
So for context, we had beer bashes historically in offices.
Oh, yeah,
right?
In the offices.
On Fridays, not every Friday, but most Fridays, there was kind of a beer bash. And a lot of people hang out, actually. It's a fairly social group. I'd say, at least in New York, there's usually a group of people kind of hanging around on a Friday afternoon for a little bit of time, at least, having a couple beers, catching up, chatting. And that's always been popular in all of our, I think, physical offices. Certainly in New York, it goes back to the Fog Creek days and other places we were. But the remote people weren't really included. And whose idea was this? Was this yours, David?
This was my idea.
God, now I'm sad I asked.
Yes.
I did not mean to give you any credit.
Yeah, so this was after the meetup in November.
October.
The meetup was in October, but starting in November, I sent out an email and was just like,
I don't like the people in the office. I am wondering if there are other people who might hang out with me.
No, I was really just like, let's just try it and see what happens. Here's the hangout link. Go there. You want to hang out and we'll see who shows up. And I said something like, you know, I don't know if anyone else is going to show up, but come 5:30, I will be sitting alone in my office, drinking a beer and staring at my computer screen.
And boy, did that draw them in.
Lo and behold, like 15 people showed up. So we've been doing it ever since, kind of numbers going up and down. Balfa rigged up this crazy thing where he can connect two Hangouts to each other, basically, incestuously, where they...
You need RCA cables. There's some RCA cables you hook
up. So Google Hangouts are limited normally to 15 people, but using that kind of crazy hookup, we can get 30 people into one of these, and we haven't run into the limit on that. So those have been
Google's going to turn that off now that you've said that.
Google doesn't even know. We're not abusing their software.
But this sounds crazy. This is one of those things where it's like, the future is a dark dystopian place where instead of spending time together, people will go in front of their computers, and it totally works.
And pretend to spend time together.
You said shenanigans. There's lots of fun to be had. People chat, and there's usually this theme, like someone taught origami.
That was a good one.
Origami. Oh, my gosh. That was great.
In fact, it was Jeff Dalgas, I believe. Developer Jeff Dalgas taught origami, right, 1 week.
I believe it was Roberta's origami that turned into a crumpled up ball of paper.
I gave up.
I saw your origami, and it was shameful. You should not have shown anyone that piece of paper.
They have a neck. I mean, it did have a neck and a small, like, mouth that...
So a swan.
If you have to defend your origami with, I promise you it has a neck, you are in a bad...
I promise.
But my favorite remote hangout story was, you know, our developers, some like to sit in their houses so they can stay without pants on or however they stay when they wake up. Some go to dedicated spaces. Jeff Dalgas in one of the early...
It was the very first one.
The early first hangout.
Go ahead.
So Jeff went to somewhere... He said, as you know, honey, my family, his wife and children, I need to go somewhere quiet to work. And I don't want to disturb you and I don't want you to disturb me. So I have to go somewhere quiet to get on my drinking remote hangout with my colleagues. And so he left his home to find a quiet space and went to a bar where he could drink in peace.
I think it was more that he didn't have any beer at home. And he was like, well, I could go out and get beer or I could just take my laptop to a bar.
I have children. I don't think the main problem was not having beer at home. But this is me speaking from my own experience. So he was remoting in from a bar. He ordered beer and sat at a table and was remoting in from there. And people were like, oh, that's cool. Where are you? And there was this conversation. And what happened was the rest of the group tracked down where he was and called this actual bar.
Yes, we asked him. This was great. So we asked him what bar he was at, and he made the mistake of telling us.
It was hilarious.
And Dave Haney on the team just decided to call them up. Oh, no. Oh, it was even better than that. He called them from the hangout. Because from a hangout, you can dial a phone number. As long as it's in the U.S., it's free. So he dialed the bar on the hangout and got the bartender. And
like a Simpsons episode. And then he asked, like, do you have Princess Albert in a can or something?
No. He said, do you see a guy sitting in the bar staring at a computer?
She goes, with headphones on.
Yeah. He was the only one in the bar at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
She was like, I had a feeling you'd call. Is this the local precinct or one from the state level?
And he said, can I pay his tab? And she said, sure. He read her his credit card and she typed it in and he paid for Jeff Dalgas's drink.
Read his credit card number on a phone call with 14 other coworkers listening to it.
That's how much we trust each other here.
Yes. Yeah.
But this is like the Internet of Things is so lame. This is the Internet of Beer. You are on a Google Hangout and beer is paid for somewhere that someone can drink in the real world.
It was pretty epic.
And then, you know, ultimately have to be carried home.
But... We were all cracking up, but also trying to be quiet because she could hear us laughing, like, in the background. And we didn't want to make it any weirder than it was by letting her know that there were 15 people listening in on this conversation.
What did you think was happening? All right.
Yeah, she was really confused. Well, no, then afterwards, I think we explained it, or Dalgas explained it to her, and she came and, like, waved at us and said hi or something. But she was also a little creeped out by the whole thing, definitely. Were you there for that, Coberta?
I was, absolutely.
Cyber.
Yes, that was a great moment. So working remotely, sorry, any other surprises or things that you've noticed? It's been a pretty smooth experience.
I notice now that I have no longer patience for commuting anywhere. The longest distance I can walk is from my bedroom to the office, and the office is like 15 meters away. I don't know how much that is in feet, but...
It's like 100 feet, I think.
Sorry.
Maybe 1,000.
67,000, yeah.
There you go.
That sounds about right, yeah.
There you go. That's my commuting.
I'm not very good at this.
Cool. So what is your setup at home? Do you have a dedicated office?
Yeah, we have two bedrooms, so I turn one of them into an office.
Okay.
That's also where my cat likes to hang, so...
Yeah, we see a lot of cats working with remote workers. Yeah. There's a lot of cats that show up in the background. Occasionally babies, but usually cats.
It's almost like there's a correlation between how infrequently you ever have to leave your home and how many cats you own.
Really? People get cats because they can leave their home.
What?
Never mind.
Okay.
No, because if you get a dog, all right, forget it.
I'm actually about to get another one. We are planning to name him Donut.
Donut?
Donut?
Yeah. Or maybe Chelsea, but it's a him.
Donut or Chelsea.
Wait,
sorry. Is it the Portuguese word for donut or you're going to name the English word?
No, the
donut.
English one, because we just actually solved that and we were right here. And I'm staying in Chelsea here in New York. And we were like, oh, you know what? Let's just name him after the neighborhood. But then he's a him, so we don't know. We are challenging the gender binary anyways.
That's right.
Yep.
I mean, how do you know what gender he prefers?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know if Donut is a girl's name or a boy's name anyway, so
Donut
it doesn't matter.
Donut could definitely go.
Or Kruller.
No, Kruller, that's a terrible name.
Is a terrible. I actually wanted to name him Turin, after Alan Turin.
Yeah, that's cool.
A good one.
Yeah,
or just Alan Turin. A lot of people name their cats, like, with full names.
Alan Turing.
And the cat's name could just be Alan Turing.
I also thought about naming him Monet, but
come
people don't understand.
No, that's a very common way of naming cats.
Stop it, Alan.
People often give their cats, like,
you can't give a cat a human
names.
Name, a pet a human name.
Yeah,
you can't.
You
can't just have an animal named Alan.
If you have a cat,
no.
Alan Turing.
Go away, Alan.
Alan Turing.
It's going to be awesome. We're like, because when you talk to the cat, someone's going to be like, the cat does not understand you. And you'd be like, doesn't he? Doesn't Alan Turing understand what I'm saying?
Even... No, my cat's name currently is Dostoevsky. That's a name.
Dostoevsky?
Yeah. Like the writer.
But just Dostoevsky, right. not Fyodor. I'm not even going to.
Fyodor.
That's actually right.
You had it right.
That was close. See, unlike origami, I got Fyodor.
What the heck was that?
And you guys didn't want to talk about service stack.
What? What's going on here?
Oh my god.
Before the podcast, I was like, let's talk about service stack. You're like, nobody cares about that. And look where we've ended up. That story. Okay, what else is on the list of agendas?
So
while we got Roberto here, we also wanted to hear about sort of, you had an interesting story a couple weeks ago. We were doing a company chat. And you brought up your sort of experience applying
here
to Stack Exchange.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe you could share that again.
You didn't apply when you first saw the listing.
Yes, exactly. Actually, I saw the listing in like July 2013. And of course, I was super excited about it because Stack Exchange seemed like a great company.
You knew David and I worked here.
I knew you guys worked here.
It was me, really. Otherwise, she would have applied to be a community manager.
Yeah, that's why I refrained from applying. I'm just...
Wow.
I'm sure it was the Stack Overflow podcast.
No, I'm kidding. And of course, it was a great company, and it had a product that everyone in the field admires and supports and everything. And I was starting to participate more in Stack Overflow, to be honest. That's how I heard about Alisten. But then as I started to see our company page and our team page, I felt a bit reticent about applying because, well, again, it was July 2013, and it looked like a boys' club in the sense of we had like 30 developers at a time, and none of them were female.
This is the sort of the Who Works Here page, basically. So it's a picture of kind of all the employees, and you're
That's
looking
right.
at what the dev team looks like, and you see a bunch of mostly white dudes.
That's right. Okay. And as I said, at the time, Anna, who's also a developer here, was a community manager, so she wasn't in the development team as well. And that's why I was like, maybe I actually wouldn't fit here. Or, you know, it looked like it was hard enough to get in here in terms of, you know, the bar, the technical skills that are required and everything. And I was like, as a woman, it just sounds impossible. I don't know if there's an unconscious bias going on or if it's just that I didn't know what was going on. I just felt uncomfortable about that situation. And I refrained from applying for a while.
So essentially looking at the screen and seeing essentially all the developers were men, it didn't really make you make any specific assumptions. It raised questions for you.
That's
right.
Is that
a fair way to put it?
It is a very fair way to put it.
So what changed?
Well,
because you're here now. So something must have changed.
Absolutely.
You did apply.
I did apply. Yeah, it has a happy ending. Well, what changed was that I'm a very big fan of Sarah Chips.
As are we.
Yeah, I follow her on Twitter forever, and you invited her to the podcast.
We did.
And I listened to that podcast.
I told you it was the podcast.
That's the first good podcast we've ever recorded before today.
That
today
was an awesome one.
The joke is it actually was the podcast.
I actually listened to it. No, really. And that was a great one. I mean, I listened because I was a fan of hers, and I wanted to know what was going on.
Yeah.
And you raised some concerns on that podcast, and
we
you
did.
Talked about diversity, and you talked about... It's like you were aware of the problem, and that's the message that got to me. It was like, oh, so they actually are aware that they lack diversity, and they think that is a problem. They are not comfortable in that situation. So I just thought, maybe I should give it a try. Maybe, you know, the mindset is not as disturbing as I thought it was. Maybe they are just not still not in a place where they want it to be, but they do want to get to that place in terms of diversity. So I just thought, I'm going to give it a shot. I'm going to apply. And I did. I'm so glad that I did because, well, now I'm here at this same podcast in section. That's what brought me here in the end.
All come back together.
The circle of life.
For those of you listening, following along at home, podcast number 54, which was posted on
November
14th.
And I applied on November 17th.
Oh, that's cool. That is crazy cool.
Yep.
So something else you mentioned in that chat that was actually a little bit surprising, but I thought it was interesting, was you mentioned that the podcast really kind of changed your perspective a bit on at least what we wanted to be. But then you also mentioned seeing something on the job listing that I thought was sort of interesting when you were looking at it after that.
That's right. The disclaimer?
Yes.
We have a disclaimer in our Work Here page, I think.
We do.
It's on the bottom of every job listing.
There you go. That's where I saw it. And it says that Stack Exchange does not discriminate against age, gender, sexual orientation, or...
Vietnam era status.
Veteran status.
Yeah.
Something else.
Basically all the things It's just a, unfortunately, I mean, I wish we put that there because we thought, oh, it would be great to have these kinds of people apply. But that's actually probably there for legal reasons.
Yeah, I want to come back to that. I think it's an interesting part of the story I want to come back to in a couple minutes. But first, I think, let me ask David a question, actually. So is Roberto doing an okay job? How's it? Actually, Roberto, this could be weird for you. If you just cover your ears for a second.
Roberto is one of the best developers I've ever hired, I think.
Yeah, I heard that. I get compliments about her all the time.
She's kicking butt on the careers team, especially all the stuff she kind of described. She's taken on, you know, some really technical, difficult stuff. Not that other people aren't doing great work as well, but I think, you know, everyone who's worked with her agrees she's just an outstanding developer. And so the...
For now. Don't.
Oh, okay. Don't get too comfortable.
Remember, it's your job to hire people who are smarter
the
than
standard
you now.
Always goes
so,
up.
Like I tell my kids, we're already proud of you. All you can do now is make me unproud of you.
My grandfather, when we went to restaurants, hold on a sec. My grandfather, when we went to restaurants, would take out a pile of $1 bills approximately equal to the amount of tip that he was going to leave and put it on the table at the beginning of the meal. And occasionally the waiter would do something and he would take $1 off.
That is not true. Nope. That is not a real story. You just made that up. Please tell me you just made that up.
Genuine Spolsky family story is an actual story.
He understood loss aversion. It's much more powerful to lose a dollar. Twice as powerful on average. Okay. Sorry. I think Roberto was saying something unrelated to Joel's grandfather.
I was saying something. Not that Roberto could say something.
That was an optimistic statement I made, I suppose.
No. So the terrifying thing is, of course, that we just got lucky. Like, she wasn't going to apply here until that podcast came out. And because she happens to follow Sarah Chips and saw, oh, interesting, and listened to it, she applied. When we had this chat a couple weeks ago, I'd never even heard this story before, and you'd been a company for a year. All of a sudden, I'm thinking, you know, how many other people did the exact same thing that we just never even knew about, looked at our job listing, thought, wow, I would really like to work for this company, and then clicked over to the team page and thought, maybe I wouldn't belong.
I can't remember that podcast, but I think that's one in which Sarah Chips told us that this whole bravado thing that a lot of startups do, and we did as well, of saying, we only hire the best of the best, and we want to hire monster animals who are amazing coding, whatever, blah, 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 does not actually reduce the number of bad applicants you get. You actually get more bad applicants, but it actually...
You select for delusional people.
It's also very intimidating.
It's intimidating, but it's also like anybody who's a non-traditional candidate is much less likely to apply in such a situation. So, you know, it sort of never occurred to us that we sort of thought, I don't know what we thought, but I'm guessing that we thought that this was attractive to people that wanted to work with other smart people who'd be like, hey, if I work there, I can work with smart people. But in fact, what they just thought was like, that sounds exhausting.
You don't think of it as an it's so easy to forget that your job listing is an advertisement.
Yeah.
Just sort of put, well, what are we looking for? Oh, we're looking for somebody who's a really, you know, awesome programmer. And wouldn't it be nice if they were also an expert at this and also brilliant at this? And so you just make it like this list of demands.
I hereby demand the most amazing person in the world.
There was a study on this that actually, I think that the conclusion they sort of came to is that generally speaking, women on average, many women, will not apply to a job listing unless they meet the stated requirements. They look at the requirements and believe their facts and tend, well, men basically have about a 60% threshold, that if they meet 60% of them, they're more
like, that's good enough.
I think it was Forbes a couple of years ago. But the reason I asked David about it, I think it's, when people talk about diversity, it's very tempting for there to be a weird debate about maybe women don't want to do that. But the point is, it doesn't matter whether or not you think it is a problem for the industry, the current levels we have, or what the reasons are. I think it is easy to conclude what you don't want is people who belong to any group or any developer out there who might not apply to your company if that developer is awesome because of some message or concern that they're getting that is not representative of you.
Oh, you don't want it to be wrong.
Right. What I think was cool about Roberta's story is what she talked about was like, I'm just not sure that's a place that would be sort of welcoming and comfortable for me. And whether you would feel that way or not, the fact that there was a super talented person out there, and we can say that as a fact because we've hired them and we don't know, who might not have applied because of some soft signals that she was seeing, or just concerns, unanswered questions, is a gap that we want to fix. And I think everyone should want to fix if you think you might have that problem.
Sure.
Yeah, it's a disaster. I mean, from my perspective, the engineering manager trying to put together a team, it's a disaster if there's a pool of talented people out there who are
self-selecting
themselves out and not even
bothering to apply.
Not even applying, so we don't even get the chance to interview them and talk to them and convince them that this is a good place.
And then reject them because of their gender, religion, race, or Vietnam era status.
No, we don't reject them on any.
I mean, sorry. I always forget which way that goes. Luckily, I'm not involved in the process. So.
Fortunately, Joel is not involved in hiring developers anymore, so you don't have to worry about that if you apply.
We made a special rule.
But one of the things you did say in that conversation, Roberta, was that once you got into the interview process, you thought it was actually pretty good and welcoming and people were nice and not jerks.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone was super, super nice.
So that's good. That made me feel a little bit better about this. But, you know, just the fact that, I mean, basically that's invisible to me. If these applications aren't even coming in, if people are just self-selecting out and not even applying, I have nothing. Like, how do I even
know that that's happening?
And I think a lot of companies look at that and they look at and they see the same thing that I do. And I look at the people applying and think, well, it's not my fault.
Problem.
You know, there's only 2% or 5% of our applicants are female or whatever other underrepresented group.
A lot of those companies may well be pretty well-meaning, and they may actually, when they finally get a diverse, a minority candidate or a woman programmer candidate or something, they may actually go to great lengths to make sure that candidate is unqualified before they reject them, or actually may go further to try to make that candidate work out than they would with a male candidate. But the fact that they're not doing anything to get the right stream to attract the right candidates to apply is...
And to be clear, that's exactly the wrong place to focus, right?
What's the wrong place to focus?
The wrong place to put your energy is let's try to help people of any group get through our application process where you try to judge your skills more easily because of some group they belong to, because
that
sucks for everybody. And I
want to
be crystal clear, we are interested in finding ways to hopefully show people what we believe is true, that people, whatever group you're in, that you will, I hope, find an inclusive environment, like working here, feel welcome, and be able to sort of do really well here. But what we don't want to do is have any kind of program that makes it easier for people like that who don't have the same qualifications. And that's where I think the focus you should take as a given, that whatever your skill-based requirements are, the way you test, the way you interview, needs to really not care about that. The key place to focus is, like what we talked before, is who's missing from that pool? Who's not applying into that process that treats everyone equally? And how do you try to find ways to get more of those people to come and take a run at it? Because you can assume, presumably, whatever group you're looking for will have just as many awesome people in whatever percent exists out there as the other groups do.
Yeah, which is pretty low, actually. You know, the developer survey that we did, maybe this is refers just to who takes developer surveys, but wasn't it something like 5% women or something that took our survey?
The developer survey showed about 5% women. It showed about 92% men, so you've got some kind of people not declaring.
Sure.
To be clear, I think the number of women in the
industry
is... That's
kind of close to the margin of error.
It's a little low. I would argue that there's probably two reasons it looks low. One is, I would guess a larger percent of the people who didn't indicate a gender are female than male, my guess. And the other thing is, there is some science. It's not super awesome, and it was a couple studies that suggest that people in underrepresented groups, when women are in an underrepresented group, they are less inclined to take online surveys in particular, that in like a random sample, they will respond less when they're in the minority.
Women particularly, or just like people that feel like they're not
This was actually targeting gender. It found it for gender. So in cases basically where women represent less than like X percent of the total, the number of women that are exposed to it, a smaller percent of them will answer than the number of men who are exposed to it.
Yeah, because they're smarter. They're like, I know no good can possibly come of this. Why would I bother?
I don't know. The why was not that, and I'm not sure. I would guess those two things together are probably a little bit of it, but we don't know. It does seem the survey results were lower than the industry average, which is pretty bad, but lower
than that. Okay.
But still, one thing I think is interesting. So, speaking as someone who is, you know, a straight white dude, generally very lucky in all of the categories where
privileged,
kind of,
I believe, is the word you're looking for.
I'm not privileged. Why do you say that? I earned every damn thing I have.
Brother. Oh, please.
Such a struggle to be straight white male.
Yes, I try to remind myself regularly whenever I'm feeling sorry for myself that basically 98% of the world would trade their lives for mine on my worst day.
I wouldn't.
David would not, because he knows me and he's mean.
I'm in the 1%.
David, you're a 1%er.
I'm in the very small percentage of people that have met your children.
You may overestimate the number of people who would want your life, Jay.
I don't really like where this is going. But Roberta, I guess a question that I think is helpful is sort of, it's foreign to me. So if, when I'm applying for a job, which I haven't done too much, but when I was thinking about applying for a job, it would not be intuitive to me to basically go, I should check out the makeup of that company. Like, as someone in my position, it doesn't even occur to me to think about that, right?
Right.
I wonder if you give just a little bit of perspective. Why it was part of your serious consideration, right? You said it was a company where you liked, you kind of knew it, you thought it was a good product, but you literally didn't apply for a while out of a concern that maybe it wasn't a good fit. If you just give a little perspective on sort of why that's the kind of thing you were thinking about coming in.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if every other woman in tech is going to resonate with that.
Oh, can you speak for all? If you could speak for all women.
I can't. Oh, can I? That would be great. It makes my life much easier.
We should be clear that the goal is not for Roberta to tell how women feel.
How women feel.
If you can speak, though, for if we think about women named Roberta who work here.
Okay.
You can represent all of them. And
I can.
Okay.
Yes. And but I'm pretty used to being in the minority group in tech events or at college. I was pretty lucky at my previous company to work on a team that were 50-50% male and female. So, but I knew that that was the exception, not the rule. So after working with so many women, and actually after realizing how sexism is an issue in tech and how women are, you know, often get a lot of, I don't want to say, can I curse? No, I cannot. I should not.
Sure. Okay.
Get a lot of shitload on Twitter and everywhere just because of their opinions, because they're women.
Horrible.
Yeah. There isn't a single day where I do not see some sort of sexist comment on Twitter, on my timeline or on Reddit or whatever. So I was trying to make sure that I'm going to work for a company where these sort of things are not, you know, supported or are not common or actually repressed. And that's what I was looking for. And to be frank, it's not easy to get that info, or it wasn't easy to gather info from our Work Here page, except for that disclaimer. It was very brief and at the bottom of the page. That's why I missed it the first time I saw the job listing. But yeah, that's kind of the message that I was willing to get. I mean, okay, how does that company stand, you know, when it comes to diversity and when it comes to sexism and this kind of problems that I didn't want to face on a daily basis, since I already have to face them in my social media or...
And you talked a little bit about, so I think some people would say, what? You know, social media. There are so many idiots, right? Social media is every kind of moron in the world to shout their yucky stuff and more people can see it. But you shared a little bit about sort of experiences, whether at conferences or sort of meeting people,
yeah,
more specific to kind of your career and what you did for a living.
Yeah, well, I cannot remember of a single conference, tech conference that I've been to where some sort of sexist behavior hasn't appeared or hasn't happened. And one of the closest examples that I can mention was last year when we were promoting Stack Overflow in Portuguese, for example.
Oh, I remember that. I went to that.
Yeah,
it was
there.
In Sao Paulo.
In Sao Paulo. There you go.
Yeah.
And that was...
What did Joel say to you? This is a safe
Joel
space. You can
was...
tell us what he said.
Awful.
We've got HR sitting right outside. Sorry, people team is right outside, ready to talk to him.
Wasn't Joel. Well, it was like actually one of the conference organizers, which makes it even
charming.
More depressing. But yeah, we were setting up the booth and I was wearing a Stack Overflow t-shirt. And one of the organizers came in and asked me, okay, what agency did I work for? And whether I was a booth babe or what I was doing there at the Stack Exchange booth. And I was like, so I actually work here.
So just to be clear, you are a developer at a developers conference wearing a Stack Overflow t-shirt.
That's
and
right.
And one of the organizers of the conference looked at you and said, booth babe, probably.
Yep, that's right. That's how it happened. And this was just one
did
of the examples.
Him?
It was a girl, actually, but no, I didn't punch her. Makes it even worse.
Interesting.
But
did you
like
punch her?
Sad... No, I did not.
Did you say, can you get me some tea, sweetie?
No, I just, nah. Some beer.
Fight fire with fire.
Oh, my God.
Grab me some beer. Well, that actually happened afterwards. We hosted a happy hour for, did I call it in English as well? Happy hour?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We hosted one of those for local developers and communities in Sao Paulo so they could, you know, meet Joe and get autographs or something.
That was fun.
It was very fun.
Mostly.
Until one group of developers called me and said, hey, our beers are not in yet. Can you figure out what's going on? Where are our beers? We ordered them like 15 minutes ago. And I was like, sure.
This reminds me of that episode of Arrested Development where what's the mom's
sea of waiters,
Lucille?
But no one will bring me a vodka.
Yeah,
tonic.
Lucille. Yeah. She's at like the Hispanic Senators organization or something.
Oh
so
God.
It's for like all the Hispanic politicians or something. And she just sort of assumes
it's the award show for the telenovelas.
There you go. Yeah, she just assumes everybody here's a waiter, but nobody will get her agenda.
And I try to take it lightly. I try not to get upset, but it's frustrating sometimes. And sure. In that conference, for example, it was very frustrating because I've only been at the company for 4 or 5 months when that happened. Mm-hmm. And I really, really wanted to discuss the technical problems that we were facing with fellow developers, because that's what we do when we go to tech conferences, right? We want to know what's going on. We want to know what people are working on. And we want to share problems and solutions. And I couldn't because no one would assume I was a developer. And even when they were told that I was a developer at Stack Exchange, they would just ignore it and keep talking to Gabe, who was a dude at our booth.
To be fair, Gabe is a pretty awesome dude.
He is an awesome dude, but he also often pointed people into my direction saying, you know what, when they asked him technical questions, he was like, you know what, she's a developer. She can answer that question much better than I could. And they would also ignore me. So that was very frustrating at the time. And Gabe, to a point where Gabe was like, I cannot answer that question to you. Please ask her.
Not actually the programmer on the team.
And he was awesome. And I was frequently complaining with him about it, actually. He was a great shoulder for me to cry in.
I feel like there's a natural instinct sometimes for people to sort of have this reaction of like, and I feel like I used to do this a lot, is sort of like, what do you care what stupid people think? Like, honestly, like when someone's going to make these unreasonable assumptions, like, why do you let it bother you? And it's so easy to feel that way when that happens to you. Like, I don't know, for me, it's like never, it never happens to me.
That's right.
And what struck me was, you know, I think we work in fields here, you know, whatever you do at a startup, if you're a product manager, if you're a developer, especially, we've all read about imposter syndrome, right? And because of the difficult work of like creating, right? And what we do, I don't create, but people here do. Imposter syndrome is like a real thing where you're sort of doubting, like, is everyone struggling this way? And when you put that together with like, if people are constantly, I literally can't imagine, if people are constantly actively to your face, assuming you couldn't possibly do the job you actually do, or that you're a beginner at it. People talk about sort of how, we'll link to it in the show notes. There's an article I liked a lot by Coding Like a Girl. Sailor Mercury is the writer's at least writing name. But she talks about that same issue, is constantly people sort of assuming she is not a developer. Or worse, if they knew they were, with all of the facts, she talks about being a TA, and the other new TAs are like, that's awesome, you're learning to code. And she's like, I am a TA in this course. You literally know I teach this course. And you looked at me and said, must be a beginner.
Yeah.
And I think there's something, you know, if you've ever struggled with sort of doubting whether you know what you're doing or whether other people believe you do, if you have people always assuming you don't all the time in a way that is hard for me to relate to, it's got to be sort of oppressive.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's just that it happens so frequently. And as I said, it's like on a daily basis, I see something sexist or not pointed towards me in particular, but towards other female developers, friends, and on either on Twitter or Reddit or something like that. We recently saw an example of that on Reddit when we posted about our developer survey, and the comments are just outrageous in terms of sexist comments. And that happens on a daily basis, and it's exhausting. It gets to a point where you're so frustrated that you can, you know, just snap for minor things or what looks like minor things.
So again, you don't have to speak for all women, but for you.
Oh, please, may I?
What could someone... What can we do in either of these cases? It's for Stack Exchange. What can we do to make, you know, the hiring page more welcoming? That would look like something that you would want to apply to.
Well, more women would help, but I know that we cannot.
That's circular.
Yeah.
I reject that claim.
We are working on that, for what it's worth.
We can hire actors.
Well, just changing the wording of our listings, I think it's a big thing. And we did that recently. You did that.
Yeah, so we've done a couple waves of changing the wording on the listings. So the thing that Joel talked about, getting
That's
rid of
right.
all the, like, we only hire the best of the best of the best of the best of the best.
That's
kind of
right.
Editing that out. And then, yeah, so we've done a couple passes at the wording there.
But. Yeah, get the best of the best. The problem with that is that it conveys a message that you have to be an expert or someone who's already recognized in the community as great developer. And that's not true for most developers or for most women development.
Mm-hmm. I think there is something in kind of what you talked about before that struck me. This resonates with some of the stuff I've seen other people say, is a lot of companies are trying to make sure they can get more applicants, that nobody's like not applying because, you know, whether they're women or people of color or whatever, because they're afraid of that. And one of the things that struck me, like when you talked about hearing the Sarah J. Chips and just that we were interested in getting better at the problem, was one thing you said. And then the other one, with that note at the bottom, was funny because I actually think we got lucky almost because you're not from the U.S. in that it's like a legal requirement. Every job listing basically has that. We do not discriminate based on blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and, I did not know it was a legal.
Right. So it's actually funny.
I thought it was thoughtful of you to put that disclaimer.
So what's funny is your comments, but we're actually adding something to that now, which sort of like says, legally, we have to tell you this, but we also want you to know this, that we think diverse teams make better products. And we actively want to get all kinds of different people. The more kind of different people we have, we think the better. And we hope that we are an awesome place to work and you'll apply here. Because one of the things you pointed out, that as we all go, God, how do we get more diverse candidates? One thing I think is interesting is almost like you're basically saying, just saying you want them made a big difference. Like you heard a podcast where we were like, we don't know what the hell to do, but we're trying. And Sarah's like, yeah, I don't know what to tell you. You could stop doing a couple of dumb things. But what spoke to you was that we were interested in the problem. And that's one of the things we're trying to do, is literally just say, we're interested in building a diverse team. If you bring diversity to our team, hope you'll apply. We think that's awesome. And it's sort of like, it almost feels like a cheat, but I think it at least conveys that you're a place that's thinking about it.
Yeah, my hope is that other women are listening or will listen to this podcast and will think about it differently, like I did when I listened to the Sarah Chips podcast, and think that we are a great fit, because we are. We are a great fit for women in development. If you're a woman and you're listening and you haven't doubts about applying, don't, and just do it because it's a great company.
Did everyone hear that? Everyone
yes,
hear
please.
That?
I can repeat it.
We need, Jay, since you're in charge of community there, a lot of people in the chat room have pointed out that we need more women moderators too.
So we have, I don't know that I know all the genders for moderators, but we have at least one, true. At least one awesome.
Out of 275.
But I would say we have actually a decent number of female moderators across the network. On Stack Overflow, I know Bluefeet is one of our great moderators, who's a woman. I don't know offhand if we have other female moderators on SO, but there's a ton across the network. There, I'd say, a pretty decent representation. I think we certainly could have more female moderators. But one of the things I wish we had a better sense of is sort of, you know, we're talking about the company a bunch, but on the site, we don't have a great sense of sort of what our female mix is of our active users. There's a ton. Kate Gregory is one. I'll just shout out because I'm off the top of my head, who I think is awesome and I see all the time.
Have I said this on this podcast that personally I would like to see more women representing themselves as women on the site when they participate on the site, especially programmers, because I would like to see more visible examples for girls learning how to program that it's not weird to join in this career path.
Yeah, that's a great point. And to be honest, my first role model as a programmer was recently driven out of Twitter because of sexism behavior, which was Kathy Sierra.
Yeah.
Oh, Kathy's great.
Great role model for me when I was first starting to program in Java, because she has one of the best sites at that
Java
time,
Ranch.
Java Ranch.
Yep.
Which we accidentally drove over with the Jeep, but not intentionally.
Oh, wow, but she's great.
She's wonderful. I'm a huge fan of Kathy Sierra, but she was actually a couple of times sort of driven out from a lot of public speaking and a lot writing by a group of people that are charitably described as trolls, but actually some of whom should have just been thrown in jail. But I can see how she did not feel safe at all being a public figure. That said, I think there are definitely people who are publicly, you know, present as female on Stack Overflow, whatever.
There's lots. And just to represent Kathy Fairley today, I think she has, for the second time, decided that being in public on the internet is not worth it for her. The abuse for her has been too much, and I think it's terrible. It's very sad. But it's not like she's like run away and is hiding under a rock. She actually just shipped a new book, which I'm told is awesome. I haven't read it yet. I've ordered it. What I can tell you is that book has, I am confident, the best video trailer for any book ever written. We actually tweeted it out. It is phenomenal. I'd encourage everyone to go check it out and probably order the book. She's great. I think a couple of people here have read it.
Yep. You know how when we get an anonymous user, we give them a little, their avatar is just a bunch of little triangles. Sometimes this is a crazy idea. I was thinking of just having generic,
it's a crazy idea.
Random picture of like Lucille Ball or Desi Arnaz. Who is Lucille Ball's?
Desi Arnaz.
Desi Arnaz.
Don't second guess yourself, Joel. You've got this.
Yeah, I got it. And it's just chosen at random, and that's what you get. And you can change your avatar if you want.
No, we should try to figure out if they're a man or woman based on their activity, and then assign them one.
Make no assumptions about gender.
There was some
you
site
can always
that
change
had
your avatar, but there's just going to be a bunch of women faces on the site.
Only the Golden Girls. You get one of
the Golden Girls.
That's
right.
You
either get one of the Golden Girls or one of the guys from.
That feels kind
of
weird. Doesn't that undermine the thing you're trying to accomplish? Like, you want to see who are actual. Like, okay,
yeah,
so take it another way. There are some men who identify as men, but have pictures of women as their avatars.
Right.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Good thing.
Because some of them are questionable.
It may depend what the avatar is wearing. Let's put a fine point on it. The state of it. But I think to your point, this is a tricky issue though, right? Because so I completely agree with you. So what I would like to see more of, what I think is awesome, is for there to be, for all of us, right? Like, why was Obama getting elected important to some people? I think seeing someone who looks like you, believing you can grow up and see someone like you who looks like your version of success.
In the White House.
Is a powerful motivator, right?
Yep.
That if you've never seen anyone who looks like you do a thing, it is easier to think you might never be great at that thing and not expect to grow up that way.
I am really probably never going to go to a Joey Graceffa meetup. Ever.
I want to go with you. I want to take this journey with you, but I have no idea what you're talking about.
I look it up, but I don't know how to spell it.
I thought I was the only one.
Abby will put some answer in the show notes. She'll figure it out.
Yes.
She's closest to the fandom.
Yeah, so I think that's, Joel, to your point, I think the easy way to put it is we'd hope to see more people who choose to, who are comfortable doing so, represent themselves as kind of role models for other women to see. I think there is an issue. I think women in particular struggle a little more with wanting more anonymity on the internet because some of the stuff Roberto talked about earlier that they just deal with a lot more. Just random daily, like, you know, harassment and you know, sometimes really gross stuff on social media. One thing about the site I think that is worth mentioning, I think we can feel good about, you won't see for more than a moment or two direct disgusting harassment on Stack Overflow. You simply won't. Our community, and I don't want to take too much credit personally, our users are phenomenal at this. They flag it, they stop it, it is cleaned up. I would argue There is probably not a single place as large and user-generated on the internet where it is basically impossible to find, you know, truly racist words or offensive terms that last more than moments.
To be fair, that's basically saying the rest of the internet is a cesspool, and at least over here, it's just kind of muddy and gross. It's not, you know, full of human filth.
You always need to be careful saying, like, I am less racist than everyone else at this Nazi convention I am attending.
Yeah.
But I do think the site is...
The site's not welcoming to anybody learning or just coming in from the outside, and that's a problem.
But let's separate the two sides. I want to go there, too, but I do think there's the sort of overt, direct, you know, disgusting stuff, right? Like, and sort of a lot of soft harassment, you know, asking people if they're single and stuff. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't stay. To your point, one thing I worry about is some of the things that make the site work that generally can make it a little unwelcoming to people, I think can be more off-putting, as Silberta says, when you feel like you're sort of constantly challenged and people are constantly asking if you know what you're doing, when every sign indicates you do, a site where it is kind of typical to say, it looks like you might not know what you're doing enough to ask questions here as part of its normal operation. I think some of the things that keep our site high quality but make it feel unwelcoming in general may be more off-putting to women in some ways than they are even to men.
A community that treats everyone like you're an idiot until proven otherwise is always going to be perceived far, far more harshly by a vulnerable or underrepresented group.
Right, exactly.
And that's a major problem. That's something I've been thinking about even with company culture. You know, we like to argue on the development team, right?
Do
I think
you?
more than other teams.
I don't.
The developers on our team like to argue. And for a while I thought, yeah, it's just how developers are. You know, they're kind of pedantic and kind of, you know, they argue, they're opinionated. But one of the problems with that, and we talked about this at the last meetup, is that not everyone communicates that way. Even forget gender and everything else. There are lots of people on the team who feel excluded by those kinds of arguments and don't want to get in a hangout and shout at people. So we need to do less of that. But also, I think that that's a real problem when it comes to diversity because, well, like Roberto was saying, if you're encountering this stuff all day, every day on Twitter, you know, you're just seeing the cesspool that is the rest of the internet. And then you get into a, you know, an argument with a coworker who is, you know, questioning you in a not helpful kind of harsh manner. You're going to perceive that differently, right?
What's that XKCD cartoon? He shows like a...
The math.
Right. The dude does an equation wrong and he says, well, you're bad at math. And then it shows the, you know, the stick figure in a skirt does the equation wrong. And it says, wow, girls are bad at math.
Yeah.
And the point is, if people are constantly assuming based on whatever group you're right. in, your gender, that you're probably not that good a developer, right? What Hobart is describing. When you come into a culture where if our default thing is you're probably wrong, prove to me the opposite. It is very easy to wonder if someone is saying that because they feel like, right, it's because you're a woman that you're not good at this, or that it just happens to be how we approach things. And I actually think one of this company's strengths is that there's a lot of healthy disagreement and we get input from everyone. But one of the things we have to get better at, and I think every company with a sort of, you know, argument and dissent respecting culture is disagreeing respectfully and learning how we can sort of express where we think we're going down the wrong path or what we need to do differently in a way that doesn't make everybody feel like they have to defend themselves, which may be particularly hostile to groups that feel like that all the time.
All right.
How are we doing at that? I want to talk about some of the things we have done that we think are helping. But the first thing is, what do you think we can get better at here? What is not as good as it could be from your experience here? And we haven't talked about this, so I'm kind of scared what you're going to answer.
Well, I don't know. That's a very hard question.
I would, it's hard. That's good.
I would have to think about it a bit more. But, well, I know you will like that, but I would rather answer to your other question, which is, what are we doing to improve?
All right, if you insist, let's talk about that.
No, because it's related. Because one of the things that, well, we know kind of sucked, or not completely sucked, but we're not as good here, is those conversations. We just never had those conversations before. And we kind of remained as a dev team, as a white boys club, and diversity was not increasing or not being talked about and within the company. And now it is. So I think that's a great thing. We recently reworded all of our job listings, which was also a nice thing. And we are starting to talk about this consistently within the company and to discuss with each other things that make other people uncomfortable, or at least just making everyone know that those kind of conversations can be had at the company. So if something happens that, for example, affects me or that I think it's offensive or sexist within the company, then I know that I can talk to people about it. And I know that that will be a conversation that will not be backlash, or people won't take it the wrong way and won't feel like just being abrasive for no reason. So I don't think I made myself clear, but what I'm trying to say is that I think it's a long and slow process of getting better at diversity. And we are taking the first steps at it, but I think it's the right steps. And I think that awareness of the problem is something that we have greatly improved on after we started doing those things.
So let me ask a question, because I think one of the more interesting things is sort of how to help people who have trouble relating. Like I said, I think there's a lot of places I've learned and where my perspective is off. But, you know, we're having these chats, we're talking about stuff. When someone hears you talking about an experience, like, how would you encourage them to sort of come up to you to try to learn more? Like, one thing you see a lot, and I used to do this, is like, people shouldn't feel that way. That makes no sense, which is not the right answer.
Well, it's hard to tell because it's something that you have to have experienced, I think, from, you know, a lot of times so that it can resonate with you. But I think that hearing about personal stories goes a long way,
yep.
You know, and the fact that you know me personally and that we work together, and then I tell you what has happened to me, actually happened to me in terms of sexist behavior that I have, you know, been through, that might resonate with some people that think this is an isolated process, or that it only happens to a minority that is very vocal, or that this kind of BS just happens to those angry feminists or whatever. And not to every woman, and that they are asking for it or something, some of those other BS. So
yeah,
maybe just knowing that someone that you know in person, it's just like sexual orientation, for example.
Hmm.
I realized that when I was younger, at least in Brazil, of course, which is also a very, you know, religious country.
Sure.
But if I only shared my sexual orientation with people after they knew me already, or they met me, or they liked me already, or they worked with me, they would take it much easier. It would not be something that they would, be concerned with. It would not define my personality for them.
Because they have a definition for your personality.
That's right. So that's kind of what happens. If I share with you stuff that I have been through in terms of sexist behavior towards me, and you already know me, so maybe that will resonate with you more than if you just hear it from a random stranger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really do think every story matters too. I mean, hearing one from somebody you already know is extremely powerful. I also think it's powerful just the sort of conversation that's been happening in tech. One of the things that has actually, I think, been impactful is just the overwhelming number of these stories that just come out over and over and over again. I think it is actually wearing people down. Even the people who started out as kind of like, really? I think this is mostly an isolated thing. When, you know, the first whatever conference disaster happened, hearing them over and over and over again, I do think that you don't realize, I didn't realize how pervasive it was.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. It's like, it is letting people down, and it is repressing, but this is about whole community and about a whole set of women that are being driven out of this industry because of their genders.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you've gone and wasted another hour of your life listening to Stack Exchange Podcast 64, recorded Tuesday, April 14th, 2015 at Stack Exchange headquarters. This podcast was brought to you by String Cheese, available worldwide. Traditionally made from mozzarella, string cheese is both a delightful form of entertainment and high in protein. Kids love it. On behalf of Jay Hanlon, David Fullerton, our special guest developer, Roberta Arcoverde, audio editor, David Greenlee, ghost producer, Abby Miller. Yeah, hi, Abby.
Hi,
she's there.
Abby.
And ex-producer Alex is... Ex-producer Alex is in line at the post office paying our service stack bill. I'm Joel Spolsky. Goodbye.
Bye.
This is for my girls all around the world.
I'd encourage you to Google the implicit bias tests. There's these pretty interesting tests you can take online. They basically ask you to just try and bucket things. They show you women and men's names and like sort of workplace and home.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that one. Or unconscious bias.
It is awesome. Yep. It will make you feel sad about the things your brain does that you don't control.
But did they get a group of unbiased people in order to benchmark those results against?
Huh?
I mean, how do they know it works? They had to find a population of unbiased people in order to set the baseline, and then...
Oh, there you are.
And that's when they found out the robots were the least biased of all. Is Roberto doing an okay job?
No. So honestly, when I heard, so when we
no.
sorry.
Thanks, David. This is gonna be edited out, right?
Just
the whole thing. These podcasts are 12 minutes. By the time we're done with them, you wouldn't have believed what we had done to Sarah Chips on that podcast.
I recommend audio editor Jason Greenley.
Yeah, we didn't actually say any of the things on that Sarah Chips podcast.
None of it. The whole thing was an embarrassment. She left in tears. However,